Simmons battling to get past Sullivan, and he's going to make it. The 3:34 in Monaco.
Track star Nick Simmons has won his share of 800-meter races, but he's also been one of the sport's most outspoken athletes, sometimes damaging his own brand with his words and deeds. When he made the 2012 Olympic team for the U.S., there was a photo of him crossing the finish line that was captioned Team USA's official pain in the butt. When he saw that, he was flattered. Nick Simmons' new book is Life Outside the Oval Office, The Track Less Traveled. He's with us from KLCC in Eugene, Oregon. And Nick, let's start right now with your goals as a runner. You've made two Olympic teams. How much longer do you think you have in your career?
Well, for sure, I'm going to train for 2016. I'd really like to represent the United States at the Rio Olympic Games. But provided those go well, it's not unheard of for an athlete to race into his mid-30s in my event, the 800, and certainly not in the 15. So it's not unrealistic for me to keep doing this for two more cycles.
Okay, and you've got some fascinating stories of your career up until this point in this book. I want to talk to you about a few of them, and starting with a coach that you had back at Willamette University. Coach Kendrick is what you called him, and he seemed to always be holding you back, doing things, training you, counseling you in a way that you did not agree with. Do you think that that affected you as an athlete? And what have you learned from that experience?
I know that I come off probably sounding a little bit arrogant in that portion of the book. It was more that I knew I needed support, but I felt that I had that between my family and Coach Sam, who the book's dedicated to, and my high school coach, Coach Shanahan, Tom Shanahan back in Boise, was willing to help me out with the workout. So it wasn't the ideal situation in that I didn't have one coach, but I had such a great network of people around me. And I've always said that no one ever makes an Olympic team by themselves. They've always got an incredible support system around them. And I was able to set that up between all the various people who had influenced me up until that point in my life.
You know, you mentioned the word arrogant. It's interesting because it seems that there's a delicate balance there between not being too arrogant that you're going to harm your prospects, but at the same time, you need some level of arrogance, not just in the running that you're doing, but also to manage your personal brand and to be make sure you're out there and you're doing things that are a little more on the cutting edge.
Absolutely. And in a sport like track and field where you don't have a huge league promoting you every weekend, we're not the NFL, we're not MLB, we're track and field. And no one's bothering to promote our brands. If we don't do it ourselves, it's not going to get done. So some might call it arrogant. Certainly it's self-promoting. But if I am going to have any hope of making a good living in this career, then I have to do some of these things like write a book or some of these more promotional self-promotional publicity stunts to try to get my name and, more importantly, my sponsors' logos out there. I'm a very private person by nature, but I realized early on in my career that the people who are private and don't share themselves with the public, they don't make the same kind of money that the athletes who are willing to really put themselves out there.
When you say put themselves out there, you actually, at the request of a PR person that you were working with, went on a date with Paris Hilton, which she may be a very nice and interesting and smart person, but did that feel a little awkward to you to be doing something like that so publicly just to, I guess, satisfy your PR agent?
At the pitch of it, I wasn't real excited about it. I thought this was just harassing the Hilton family, and I wasn't on board with that at all. But once Hal Lifson, my publicist, was able to arrange the date, it changed to more just curiosity. I was just really, really fascinated with the idea of sitting down with someone who'd lived a life like Paris Hilton has lived and just learning everything I could from her. She's just lived such a fascinating, incredible life. And to have an hour of her time to just talk about it, you know, everything, family and travel and business, was really, really cool. And, you know,
that didn't seem like something you had to do just for your job.
No, it certainly wasn't. I'd done it for free. I just, you know, what a great opportunity. And it's, again, I always say, you know, track and field has given me so much, not just a career that I love and a stable income, but I've been able to see the world and I've been able to meet people that, you know, maybe never would have gotten to meet otherwise.
You talk a lot in this book about the partying side of being an athlete and even an Olympic athlete, and your sort of decisions that you made over the years about either partying with everybody else or not partying because you wanted to focus on your sport. And there's even a section where you talk about people doing cocaine. It's not exactly clear whether you did it with them. Did you do cocaine while you were an athlete?
You know, that's a subject that maybe is best save for my next book. I've partied a lot in my youth, and it was more just an angsty 20-something-year-old who wanted to, you know, not feel like I was missing out. And I used to kind of resent running for that reason. I always felt like it was holding me back from what all my other friends were doing. At the time, my friends were traveling the world and partying, and so I did get to experience a little bit of that. But now at 30, looking back on my career, I'm just so grateful that I had running and something to keep me somewhat accountable, because that's a path that's easy to go down. And, you know, running just always kind of, it was always there. It was always the steady. No matter what was going on in my life, I had to train. And it definitely kept me accountable through college and then, you know, into my young professional life.
Do you think there's too much partying?
You know, it's a very stressful job. And I think that you have to press the reset button and blow off some steam. And some people do that with partying. I do it with an occasional drink. I also do it with fishing and hunting. And nowadays you'll find me out, you know, on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday morning out fishing and hunting and hiking more than partying. But I think you have to have that balance. You can't, you know, Americans see our Olympians once every 4 years and they think they're these robots that just train for 3.5 years and then, you know, show up to the Olympic Games and win medals. But we're people with real lives and families and you know, obligations. And, you know, we get tired, we get run down, we get bored. And I think that the partying can be overdone, certainly. But I think that I found a good balance for myself, certainly now later on in life. Maybe in college I didn't have that same balance that would have helped a lot.
Finally, Nick Simmons, I want to ask you about your life off the track. And it's clear that you've had to, over the years, choose career over a relationship, over getting into a serious relationship and maybe getting married and having kids. Do you regret that at all, or do you feel like you made the right choice all these years?
No, I definitely feel that I've made the right choice. I personally view life as a series of really incredible adventures. And one of the adventures I wanted to have when I was young is I wanted to go to college, and I wanted to have the full college experience. So I chose a Division III university, Willamette University, and I had that amazing adventure. And then from that adventure, I wanted to go on to be a professional athlete. And for the last 8 years, that was my priority, and I really worked my butt off to be the absolute best runner that I could be. And now as I enter my 30s, I see a new series of adventures unfolding. I want to finish out my running career as strong as I can, and then I have new adventures that I'd like to tackle. I'd like to climb the Seven Summits, the tallest mountain on every continent, and I'd like to start a family. And I think that if you view life as a series of adventures, certain adventures have to come in chronological order, and they present themselves in a logical order. And for me, the running took priority in my 20s, and I think that these climbing the Seven Summits will take priority in my early 30s. And then after I've tackled that one, I think that the next logical step would be to have the adventure of being a husband and a father.
But before that, you did have to throw the beer mile in there.
Oh, yeah, you always have to have the beer mile in there. I'll actually be running the World Championships of the Beer Mile December 3rd down in Austin, Texas, that Flow Track's putting on.
And do you think you're going to be able to get it in under 5 minutes?
I don't know. My American record is 5:19, but I was drinking some pretty sudsy beers that day. So with the right beer and the right training, I think I can crack 5 minutes.
By the way, I guess we should tell people that don't know, the beer mile is where you would have to drink several.
You chug a beer, run a lap, and do it 4 times. So at the end, you've drank 4 beers and run 4 laps for a full mile. My American record stands at 5:19, but I think that I think I might be able to crack 5 at the World Championships in December.
Nick Simmons, his new book is Life Outside the Oval Office, The Track Less Traveled. Nick, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And you can read an excerpt of Nick's book, including all about the beer mile, at hereandnow.org.
I'd be laying on the track.
Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. This is Here and Now.